Hello and welcome back to the My First Marathon podcast. My name is Taylor and today I'm joined by a guest who I believe has more marathon experience than all of the guests that I've interviewed so far combined. He has been running for the last 12 years and in that time has completed 12 marathons and 10 half marathons. I'm so excited to talk to him today. I'm sure he's got lots of tips and tricks for us. So let's jump right in. Please welcome Scott. Scott, thank you so much for coming on today. It's great to meet you. I want to kind of start from the beginning. I've already done your intro, so everyone knows you've ran 12 marathons, 10 half marathons. You've got quite the experience in the running world. But taking it way back, how did you get into running originally?
Honestly, I'm like all of 5'6" if it's humid and I'm fully expanded. So, so my wife and I, we were at a weird point in our life where we were watching an infomercial on a Sunday afternoon, and I had gained a lot of weight actually. And I hope they don't hear this, but my brother and my dad are both pretty overweight and they're all about the same height. And I was like, I'm just not going to do that. So I actually got into like PX, what is it called?
P90X?
P90X. P90X. So all of a sudden, we were getting in good shape and whatnot, started doing things at the church with that and Insanity. And then some guys at the church were like, hey, you should come run. And we were just running around the parking lots of a high school every morning and stuff like that. So all of a sudden a 5K came up and I went up to do the 5K. And I think I was about 40 already when I just started running. I mean, I didn't do it in high school, really. I should have, but I was a musician. So I started, I did this 5K and I signed up. And I just went out and ran it as hard as I could. And all of a sudden, I came in like third place in my age group.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, in my age group. And I was like, whoa, this is kind of cool. And they were like, and everybody at my church was so mad at me. They were so mad. They were like, you don't even run. Like, what are you doing in third place? So I was like, well, maybe I should actually practice. That'd be a good idea. So then I started actually like practicing running, doing intervals and whatever else they told me to do, reading some books. And then all of a sudden, and this was probably in, this would have been in maybe May or April when I did the 5K. And by May, because then by February, I signed up for my first half marathon.
Okay,
And I was like, let's just see what happens. So I signed up for St. Pete Rock and Roll, and I went down with a buddy named Bobby. And all of a sudden, I ran my first half marathon in like 1:46.
Wow.
And I didn't know. I was like, I got done. I was like, is this good? I don't know. I mean, it's obviously not the top five or anything crazy. So I was like, is this good? And people are like, holy crap. Well, that kind of like feeds into me.
Sure.
And I'm like, I've just got to see what happens. So then I started doing the long runs on the weekends and the whole deal. And that November, I'd been running actually September, October for the 5K, because it was February for the St. Pete's half. And then right around a year of running, November that year, I did Chickamauga, which is a full marathon at a Chickamauga battlefield, North Georgia, right in Chattanooga area. And I signed up for the full and went out and just did it with a buddy of mine named David. And he was like, oh yeah, it's a great course. You go out of the army base or whatever, and then you run two giant loops and then it comes back in. I'm like, well, that sounds horrible, but okay. So we ran the first loop and I was really doing good. And then I ran the second loop and I was wearing these shoes, and I don't really want to blast them, but it was these shoes that have these treads underneath the bottom. You're supposed to stand on the balls of your feet.
Right.
I don't remember the names of them actually. But anyway, as you get tired, you tend to fall backwards.
Right.
So I was falling back on the back of my foot, and this tread that was at the bottom of my forefront became almost like you were stepping on a twig every time. And I think it was just a weird pressure point. So it started really hurting. And then I crossed railroad tracks about mile 24, 25. And I heard pop. And I went, oh, God, really hurt. And I broke the third metatarsal in my foot. So it's
my gosh.
If you look at your hand, since you and I are able to see each other, it'd be this bone, the middle bone of your foot. So it kind of fractured. And so I'm running the rest of the race. I'm like kind of hobbling. But I finished the race in, 3 hours and you know, 58 minutes or something crazy.
Still great, all things considered. Yeah.
I don't know any better, right? I'm just like finishing, but then I can't even barely walk to the car. And so we went to grab something to eat, and I couldn't even walk in the restaurant hardly. And by the time I got home, he's like, just put some ice on it. You'll be fine. It's your first race. You're just sore. I got home, put ice on it, went to the foot and ankle specialist the next day. He's like, you runners, I swear, you broke your foot, dude. And I was like, what do you mean I broke my foot? And he's like, you need to wear this boot for a couple weeks because there's really nothing we can do about it.
Yeah.
He goes, I swear, you runners. He goes, the only thing worse than you guys is gymnasts.
Yeah, and, just and the group that's going to push themselves through anything. Yeah,
it's just people who are driven. So anyway, so I recovered from that, and I was like, never again, never again. And then 3 weeks later, I signed up for another marathon, I'm sure. So
it hooks you. It does.
Yeah, it's just one of those weird sicknesses we have. Because then it became, well, how fast can I go? And then better and better and better and better. I did Savannah and Publix and several others. And it was a lot of fun, but it was also just extremely strenuous on my body.
Sure.
So so then it took all Saturday morning. You know, I'm out there running at 6 a.m. and I'm running until 10:30, and I'm like running 3.5 hours or whatever, you know, and it just became this one thing. Then all of a sudden, quite honestly, how it kind of started to take on its own life, because then somebody said, you should try for Boston. And I was like, why, what? And they're like, yeah, it's the only Boston, you know, that's the only marathon you really have to qualify for, other than like U.S. Olympic trials and all this. I was like, no. So then I started, it took about 2.5 years. And I would come in, and I think at my age group at the time, it was 315. I would come in at 318 and a half because the last 2 miles would fall apart. And you know, if you hit the wall or if you just didn't hydrate correctly or nutrition, I mean, it was a million things, right? And
sure.
It took me about 2.5 or 3 years to qualify. And when I finally qualified, I qualified on one outside of Atlanta called the Silver Comet Trail, which is an old railroad bed. So it doesn't have a lot of up and down. It's like 3% maximum. So it's pretty level, but it's just the most boring run. You run, it's basically a black trail through the woods. And then you run out there and then you run back. And it's just really boring. But I did it 1 year, came in at 318.5. And 315 was the qualifier, so I didn't qualify because I fell apart in the last couple miles. The next year I was 43. So what's interesting about Boston is to qualify for Boston, it's what age will you be when you run Boston?
Qualifying time.
Right. So I was 43.5, but I wouldn't be 45. I would be 45 when I ran Boston. So I qualify within the 45 window.
Got it. Okay.
So it went from 315 to 325. And I ran a 3:20:10 or 3:20:09. And so I was 4 minutes and some change before the qualifier. And, you know, just because you qualify basically qualifies you to sign up for the race. And
doesn't guarantee anything.
I'm probably well aware of this, but it's like, then they just start shaving it down. And I think the actual for my age group, you had to end up with a 3:21:40. I mean, I wasn't that far in. And I beat it by almost 5 minutes, and it was just barely still in. But so I qualified in 15, but that was on Halloween on 2015. I didn't get to run it till April 2017. So a year and a half later.
You had some time.
Yeah. So it was crazy. And I was running the whole time with a hernia, the sports hernia.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. You were pushing through quite a bit through this whole thing.
You know, you can't take time off, because as soon as I took time off, my speed went out the window.
You have to start all the way over.
Yeah. So it was brutal.
Wow. Wow. So you had quite the start.
Very long-winded.
Yeah, no, that's totally fine. So you, I think like everybody, you started at the 5K distance just to kind of dip your toes in the water and started to get some validation from the group that you were running with. What was the training plan like back then from like 5K to half marathon? Were you following anything or mostly just following the group that you were a part of?
You know, for a while there, it was just run 5 miles every day, and then on the weekend, start running the 13 to 18s and start trying to escalate. And we were kind of doing like a, the Jeff Galloway. At one point, I did a little bit of the walk and run, and then I realized it drove me back crazy to watch somebody pass me while I was doing the walk. So then I started doing just some kind of trainings that I found online with different philosophies. And then at some point I switched it up, and I don't know that it helped me or didn't, but there's one called Run Less, Run Faster. So it basically says only run 3 times a week, but you run one like it's kind of like intervals. One was like a tempo run and then a long run. So you've always got some aims and you basically go, here's what I want to qualify for. And you put the math in there and then it tells you, here's what your intervals need to be. Here's what your pace runs, your tempo runs need to be at. And mm-hmm. It was cool, but man, it was hard. I mean, the tempo run, they had you going some really, really fast paces. So it was hard. And then the idea is that on the other two or three days a week, you would do things like swimming or bicycling or something else to offset, more of a aerobic cardio thing.
Yeah.
I didn't really do that correctly. So I don't think it played well for me. So I was just better running 4 to 5 days a week and trying to get, 35 to 45 miles in.
Yeah.
But again, that took a lot of half Saturdays. And then by the time I got home by 10 o'clock or whatever, I look at my wife and go, I'm going back to bed. I mean, I'm exhausted.
Yeah, exactly. The whole day is shot.
And the reason we had to run so early is because my running partner was a vet. So he had to be at work at 9. So we had to be done by 7:30. So we would run at 3:30 or 4 in the morning just to get it done.
Oh my gosh. Jeez. So yeah. So your whole day was over by, like you said, 9 or 10 o'clock in the morning. Yeah.
We were doing some stupid stuff. We were running at 4 o'clock in the morning. And I had some running partners named Sean and Luis. And we would do some crazy stuff at 3:30 or 4 o'clock in the morning to run on Saturdays. And they were like, what are you doing? I'm like, but we had to get in before everybody had to go to work.
Right. Well, that's great that you had a community around you as you were kind of getting started. So you had people to look up to and to train with and to get advice from, I guess, because I think there's a lot of people that are starting out on their own and aren't really sure where to look for resources and things
that
like that.
I think community is huge. To do alone. That is a really hard thing to do alone. I mean, what I found was, and I didn't get involved in this group, but had I not had my own little group that ran at the school, I would have gotten, and the reason I met these guys, by the way, was through a 5K where I came in right behind him. And I said, dude.
Oh, cool.
I thought you would totally slow down and I'd be able to catch you. He goes, I thought you were going to catch me. And I realized at the end of it, I had only run like a half ever. And he had just finished running 2013 Boston.
When
the bombing had happened. He had just finished Boston. And I was like, well, no wonder he didn't slow down. He had so much more longevity than me.
Yeah.
So it was crazy. But we became friends with that. And then we became running partners. All that to say, I would, if I had to start all over again, I would find the best running shoe store and they always have running groups.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Like a Fleet Feet or something like that, you can find a running group through. Yeah, totally. Would agree with that for sure.
I didn't take advantage of that because I had my own little group finally, but I would, if I had to start all over again, that's exactly what I would do first.
That's cool. Yeah. That's part of the reason why I wanted to start this podcast, to be quite honest, is because when I was starting out, I didn't have a lot of resources. I didn't know that I could go to a local running store and find a group to run with, to ask questions to, things like that. So somewhere where you can hear from other people who went from maybe zero or maybe, are partway through their running journey to the marathon distance, having one area to do that, I think is helpful for sure.
And it's just a great relationship builder too. I mean, you'd be surprised. I mean, and you probably know this already, but it's like amazing how many good conversations happen on a run.
Oh yeah. Especially the longer distances. You got a lot of time to talk to people.
When everybody gets quiet, it's time to finish.
Yep. Exactly. That's great. So when do you feel like you really caught the bug? Cause the marathon distance isn't something you just wake up and decide you're going to commit to. So where in your first, I guess, year of running, did you finally decide, all right, I'm going to do the full thing.
I did the 5K just for fun. It was a fundraiser, I think, for my kid's school or something like that. I mean, it was one of those things where I just did it for fun. And then I was like, I got done with that. And they were like, wow, you should try the half. And I was like, okay, the rock and roll stuff is just fun. You get a way to travel. It was when I did the half and did a good time that somebody was like, you're actually really decent at this. Like, you should consider. I was like, there's no way in the world I'm doing a marathon. No way.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, it was like, 3 weeks after you say that, you're like, I think I'm signed up for a marathon.
Yeah.
And then it just became interesting because then it just became this personal challenge. And I think that's the interesting thing is like, it's kind of like like golf, people would say that about golf or tennis. Like, you can't blame anybody else.
Yeah.
It is you and you and you. I mean, you can have bad weather, you can have bad nutrition, you can have bad muscles, you can do whatever you want, but it's you against you.
Yeah.
At the end of the day. So it's really, and I'm all about just that self-improvement thing. So I really wanted to see what I could do. And it brought out really probably the best parts of me because it really showed me like, wow, you're really digging for this thing. And it was painful. I remember we got out of that first half marathon. We were driving back from St. Pete back to Atlanta. And I remember stopping at a Subway sandwich shop to get us to get some lunch, and I looked like a 95-year-old man trying to get out of that car. It was so painful.
Everything hurts. Yeah.
So, I mean, it was just, but it was also the flip side of that is there's something exhilarating about really pushing yourself to new limits.
Totally. Yeah. And I think you have to cross the finish line a couple of times too before you realize that, like, you have to run the 5K and run the half marathon and be in the race environment to really catch the spark in the beginning. I feel like once you've got a good base, I think you can just commit to whatever you put your mind to. But in the beginning, I think the finish line feeling is huge.
Yes. Yes. Very much so. And then what's interesting is the finish line becomes almost a nemesis, which is weird because as I got old, I think, and I was talking to somebody about this recently that you know, a mutual friend of ours, the finish line kind of becomes, well, you think the finish line is going to be a happy part where you finish across the finish line, you're like, oh, I'll be happy if, and then you get across the finish line, you're like, good grief, I'm not happy. Now, what's the problem with that? And it's the whole element that really, if I could go back and embrace it, I would embrace the journey more. Because the finish line is always a moving target.
Right, right. That's interesting. I don't think I've hit that point yet. So I'm interested in that side. So when did that shift happen for you where the finish line wasn't so much a celebration of what you just did and became, you know, something that kept moving?
I think it was honestly, I mean, I think when I qualified for Boston, I mean, I had told myself, if I qualify for Boston, I will finally be happy. And I crossed the line and I was happy. But at the same time, I was like, wait, it's still empty. Like, it's weird. You know, like, okay, now I got to run another race still. And now I, now I did it. Now I did it. Now what? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I did an ultra and I enjoyed the heck out of it. But it was just, again, it was that element of like, I never did ultras because I was always training for Boston. And I didn't want to get hurt in the woods, you know, kind of thing. But it was just this interesting element of life that I've really realized kind of at a bigger picture is that it's cool to hit those goals, but you don't realize those goals are just another step on your pathway and that the finish line is kind of like the horizon of the sun. You know, you just kind of, you'll never catch it. So unfortunately, the if then statements just don't work. If I do this, then I'll be happy. No, you won't. Because then it's like, what's the next goal?
Right, right. That's interesting. I was actually listening to a podcast the other day. I think it was, I think Tony Robbins was a guest on it, but they were saying something really similar. It was like, progress isn't, or I'm sorry, the finish line isn't what makes people happy. It's progress that makes people happy. Because when you hit the finish line, the feeling of feeling accomplished is finite. It only lasts, you know, could last a couple of hours for some people, could last a couple of weeks for some people, but then you're always left with this feeling of like, what am I doing from here? Did I actually accomplish something? Was that the goal? Do I have another goal? Yeah. It's always a feeling of emptiness. So I think that's a really good point of just finding success in the progress of the whole thing.
Well, it's 100% true. And it's the Tony Robbins philosophy, you know, like if you're not living, if you're not growing, you're dying kind of a philosophy. And it's like, it took me a long time. I mean, I'm a good bit older now, but it took me probably a lot of years to realize that too late.
Yeah. Yeah. So when did you realize it, I guess? When did you start to embrace the progress of the thing and stop chasing the finish line?
I think probably within the past 5 years, easy. Yeah. I mean, I would say it's within the last 3 years even. We made a big family move from one city, from Atlanta to Savannah. And it was this whole element of when I move, I'll be happy. No, that didn't work. When I golf twice a week, I'll be happy. No, that didn't work. When I just like one thing after another, when I went and I realized, oh my gosh, no, it's not. But enjoy every single day and just for what it is. And it's kind of become a more of a life by design philosophy. It's kind of cool.
Yeah, that is really cool. I guess in the last 3 years, how have you applied that philosophy to running? Has it changed your training? Has it changed how you think about training?
So the running I kind of actually diminished, or I should say just kind of fell off a lot of the running. I did 2017 Boston and then in 2019. So I took half of 2018 off because I was dealing with some injuries and whatnots. And then I started going, well, I think I want to try to requalify again. So I really got back into training heavy and I went to Fargo at the beginning of 2019. It was in April or May of 2019. And Fargo is one of the top qualifiers from Boston. And I was really good up to about mile 21, really good. And it wasn't because I crashed. But the way the course runs, it was unnecessarily 43 degrees, 30 mile an hour winds with rain sideways.
Jeez.
And so on the last 5 miles, you come to this part in Fargo and you basically turn right in this neighborhood and you just go north for 5 miles. I think it's, I don't know which direction it really is, but I was going directly in the wind. I turned and the wind stood me up.
Oh
I
my
went from a
gosh,
lean
crazy.
to a stand up and I went from 7:30 to 7:45 to 8 to 8:15 to 8:30 to 9, and I was like, I'm done. And I think I
Yeah.
finished, and I think I had to finish again at like 3:25, and I think I finished 3:28. And I was so mad because the weather just killed me. And
Yeah.
it was so cold. And so then I was just like, I don't know. I signed up for a thing called I think it's called Seven Continents Marathons or something like that. And it's this club you can join. And this is really kind of interesting if you've never heard this. But it's
Yeah, no, I have not.
so I think it's called Seven Continents Marathons. And basically it's a club you can join, and it might be $1,000 or $500 or something. But they will guarantee your entry in any race.
Oh, no way.
Except for Boston. Because you have to qualify. I
Yeah.
think even they might even do Boston under a charity guise, but I wanted to do the Abbott Six at the time, right? So I wanted to do
Yeah.
Chicago and whatever. So I ended up going to New York, and it was December 3rd, maybe 2019, and I got an upper respiratory about 3 days before I went up there. So
Shoot.
we're flying up there, and I'm starting to cough. So I went out there and started the race, and about 10 miles in, I was just hacking, hacking, hacking. So I finished Boston. The short version story is I finished Boston, I'm sorry, New York, and then came home, and COVID happened almost immediately in the news cycle. So I don't know if I had an early case of it or not, but I ran New York, and that was my 12th and final marathon. And then since then, we've made a lot of transitions in life. We've got kids that have graduated high school, going into college. I've got a kid graduating college in 3 weeks. So we just kind of made some life transitions, and I kind of
Sure.
took the running and put it to the side and just
Sure.
became more aware of the fact that as I get older, I need more fitness, not so much cardio. So
Sure,
running kind of has taken a back seat now.
sure. Well, I mean, it's a time-consuming sport, right? Especially the
Yeah.
marathon distance. It's not like you're committing just your weekends to it. You're committing 3 to 4 days a week, and you're committing a couple of months to it, whatever race you're leading up to. So that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, in fact, I took all that energy and put it towards golf now.
Perfect. Just put that towards another vice.
That's great.
But yeah, so taking it back a little bit then, I guess. So you were injured after your first marathon. What was the recovery like for you? Like, were you thinking that was my last marathon? I'm going to be done from here, or were you pretty confident that you were going to bounce back quickly and get back to it?
Good question. So, I mean, my foot was just damaged, and I wore a boot for about a day, and I was like, I'm not doing this. But I did change shoes, and went to something a little bit. I went to a running store and actually did a, and I had done that the first time too, by the way. But I had gone to a naturalist store the first time, and they were like, "Oh, these are the greatest shoes for naturalists." That's great for about 5% of the running population. The other
Sure.
95%, you go to Fleet Feet and buy Nikes or New Balance or Asics or
Yeah.
Brooks, like that, right? And I really went back into the store and said, okay, what do I need to do? And they put me in some Brooks, and the rest of my career from the running standpoint was really great. Once I recovered, then it just became, can I get back to being as fast as I was? And then that's kind of what started feeding it. Because I did a couple 5Ks, and all of a sudden I was coming in second in my age group, and then first in my age group, and
Yeah.
then second overall. And I was like, oh my, like I'm
Yeah.
47 years old and I'm beating these young punks. I was like, this is great.
Yeah.
So, it was a lot of fun, and that was what I worked on for speed. And then just again, I probably had a 7 or 8 year period there where I was just signed up for 2, 3, 4, 5 races a year constantly,
Yeah.
and it was just a
And
great way to see everything.
was it usually one marathon a year, or were you doing multiple in a year?
I think I was probably doing 2 to 4 a year.
Wow.
I mean, I did 12 there, but I mean, for the first year, so the first year I did the Chickamauga, and then the next year I think I did like Savannah, Nashville, and then maybe Savannah, New Orleans, and then it became like Albany to try to qualify, and Silver Comet and Publix. And oh, I did Publix completely illegally. You'll love this story. I did Publix and I finished it in 3:28. But it had my wife's name under the bib. So she had signed up with her friend because she was
Oh,
starting
okay.
marathons.
Yeah.
She was running marathons. Her friend got sick, so she was like, I'm not going to do this race. Here, you go run it. So I qualified for Boston when Amy's name came across the finish line.
Yeah.
And then when they found out, when we went back to look at the camera and realized it was me, she got a disqualification.
No.
Yeah. It was actually funny. Because she didn't care. She had already run two marathons. This was going to be her third. But she had run Atlanta and Publix. And this was her third one. She was doing Publix again, I think it was. And so she got a disqualification from Boston because we qualified for Boston under my name. And we weren't doing it for that reason. Running the race with my buddies. She didn't have the bid, and people called me Ami, which was AMY. So it's Amy, right? So it was just actually a humorous, kind of an interesting little side story.
That's funny. Yeah, that the Boston qualifier, that at that point you had already qualified, right? So that was just...
No. This was well before I had qualified.
So that was before. Oh, okay. Okay, got it.
No, this was probably...
So you qualified under your wife's name before you had actually qualified under your own name.
Yeah, that was probably 2013, and I didn't qualify till 2015.
Got it. Okay. Okay. That's funny. Yeah. That's funny. Yeah, it is. It is for sure. So how did training evolve for you over time? Cause you like running 2 to 4, you know, a year, that's something you're constantly training for, right? I mean, you're maintaining a base at the very least, but how did it evolve over the years, the more marathons that you ran?
One of the things I think I started doing on the off days, because I started really getting tired of running every single day. So a lot of times I only did 3 or 4 runs a week. But in between I would do like Insanity. So I was using speed work, like on the, you know, if you've ever done Insanity, like that whole workout with the P90 group, that whatever it's called, Beachbody. It was a lot of, you know, quick spurts of energy, the bursts. You do a ladder exercise or whatever. So I started using that to my advantage. I think it helped the fast twitch muscles a little bit. And I wasn't sure because I just running every day just didn't do it for me. I mean, at some point, I just felt like I was falling into a lazy groove.
Yeah. Yeah. So some other, I guess, cross training in a way is what you were.
Yeah. I wish I had been better at it. I mean, when I got injured at one point, the one time after I qualified for Boston the first time, my hips were giving me a big problem. And I joined LA Fitness and went and started doing pool. And that was interesting because I never wanted to do tries, still never have. But the swimming thing was very different for me to actually learn to swim the correct way, which I say that loosely. I mean, I watched YouTube, but I mean, you know, nevertheless. But to actually like swim hard was a total cardio help, actually.
Yeah, yeah. I'm surprised you didn't dip into the tri world. I feel like that's a natural progression from the marathon space is to move your way into triathlons.
You know, I think the reason I didn't, one, I didn't want to buy a $2,000 or $3,000 bike. And then the second part was I didn't really have anybody that I could ride with on that standpoint. And then the third part, I think, kind of came down to my wife saying that you're never going to own a motorcycle. I didn't know anybody who hadn't taken a pretty major spill.
Oh, really? Okay.
It's kind of one of those when, not if kind of a things. At least from my experience of the people that I was around, everybody had taken pretty major spills. And I was just like, that doesn't intrigue me that much.
Yeah. Yeah. That, I mean, that makes sense. That's something I didn't think about, or I guess I didn't realize that so many people were at risk of being injured that way. Yeah, but
I guess someone was, but I mean, I had a friend.
No, I don't blame you. It's something that's been on my mind. I've only ran one marathon so far, so maybe I'm jumping the gun a little bit. But once you do it, you're like, what's next? What's the next challenge? Triathlons definitely have come to mind. But the biking part, I just figured since I'm a runner, that'll be no problem. I was more worried about the swimming, but it sounds like the biking's got more to it than maybe I've thought about.
Being locked in and just getting like,
oh, true.
You know what I mean? Like that's yeah. And we have a Peloton, so we do that. And I'm telling you, it's a whole different set of muscles, and it's a whole different
space. Is this something you think you'll ever get back to?
Triathlons, no. Running, I think, no. I think for me, what it is now is I'm reading a lot of books like Outlive by Dr. Peter Attia. And he talks a lot about... this is all good and everything, but you really, as you hit certain ages, are going to start losing muscle strength. And I think that's the biggest thing is I just really want to start working out more from a strength standpoint and being strong, because I'm watching everybody around me and they're just getting weaker. And he's like talking about like 10%, like every decade you lose strength. I mean, it's a lot.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of at this longevity thought now of like, how do I stay really super strong?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and running's hard on your body. So pushing yourself for that long, I'm sure, is just going to continue to deteriorate and deteriorate your joints and all that good stuff.
You know, what's interesting about that, you'd say that. The people that I know that run, I have a guy that's probably a friend of mine, like 60, between 65 and 70, and he's still killing it on the runs. And one of my dad's friends is 75, and he's run over 100 marathons now.
Wow.
I'll actually connect you with him. You'll enjoy that one.
I would love to talk to that one. Yeah.
I'll connect you with Charlie. He's such a good dude. And
that would be great.
But he's run over 100 marathons and run Boston a handful of times.
Wow.
But the whole thing about that is, if you continue to run, all the muscle strength around your joints is what keeps your joints healthy.
Oh, okay.
It's actually counterintuitive. It's not your joints that wear out. It's the muscles around your joints that don't support your joints. And that creates... So it's kind of not the way you think about it, at least from everybody I'm talking to. And so that's what we really want to, again, we want to stay really good with like squats and strength around my muscle, around my joints, because it keeps everything better. And then the running's easy.
Right. Well, yeah. And a lot of the advice I've gotten so far has been to prioritize strength training early on, especially if I could go back, I would have done it a lot more. I definitely didn't do enough leading up to my first marathon, but that's a lot of the advice I've gotten is prioritize strength early on and mobility too, and do it often.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, again, David Goggins, if you go back and listen to any of his books, right?
Yeah.
The things that I'm starting to realize, especially as I get older, is I would probably go back to run less, run faster, which is one tempo, one interval, and one long run. I would probably spend 2 to 3 days either swimming or doing heavy weight training. And then the other thing that I would add in that's not really, I don't think, talked about very much, is I would probably spend 20 minutes to 30 minutes every single day stretching like nobody's business, doing either yoga, stretching.
Really?
Because David talks about how he locked up after 100 milers and couldn't run for months. Because of just purely like mobility.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. That's super important. And that's something that nobody prioritizes either. No. All the runners I talk to, nobody wants to stop and stretch. Nobody wants to strength train. Everyone just wants to run.
No,
but
and I would
it's
love
definitely
to be
important
to have massages and stuff like that. But I mean that even just if we didn't do that, I think that would be massive. So I'm really spending more time doing those things because it becomes more and more obvious the older you get, like it goes way fast.
Sure. Sure. Yeah, that's interesting. That's really interesting. So I guess going back again, what do you feel like was, because you've got 12 marathons under your belt, so you've got a big sample size. What race did you feel the most confident running?
That's an interesting one. Gosh, most confident running. I was really, All right, let's see. Chickamauga was for fun. Savannah, the first time, was for fun. New Orleans, oh my gosh. New Orleans, I was trying to qualify. And you talk about a bad case scenario. We were running towards this corner, and this sheriff lady was sitting on the corner and not directing traffic. She was just sitting there for security, I guess. But people got to this corner, and some of the runners went left, and some of the runners went right. And I was qualification time. I ran with 6 people. And you were supposed to go right.
Oh, shoot.
I lost 2.5 minutes going down to a dead-end street, having to turn around and miss my qualification. Fargo, I felt good. New York, I was just doing for fun. New York, actually, I stopped at a bar and had a beer at 10 miles just for fun. In the middle
That's
of the race.
Crazy.
I actually had a beer with my friends. It was actually a lot of fun. Albany,
That's
I
crazy.
Felt really good. Albany was kind of hilly, but Albany in... Albany, Georgia is the Snickers Marathon is one of the better qualifiers. That was a really good race. I felt great during that one and just fell apart at the end. Silver Comet is a fantastic, simple race. I don't know if they still do it, but because it's so level, the challenge on that is you don't use your other muscles. So it's the same muscles for 26 miles, right? But the first Silver Comet, I was killing, and then I just locked. I mean, I remember, actually, here's a great one. At mile 25, I remember stopping on the path. I was on qualification time. The qualification time was 3:15. I was probably at 3:02, and I stopped in the middle of the path. I couldn't move.
Completely cramped up or everything locked up?
My quads just locked up. And I was like, what is this? And you talk about feeling like you're in a dream. I couldn't even like walk hardly. It was just like they were just shaking.
Oh my gosh.
It was the weirdest thing. That was Silver Comet was probably my favorite race both times.
Yeah.
In the sense of feeling like I could qualify and accomplish my goal.
Yeah.
Fargo was probably the most friendly race. I mean, people were just so lovely up and they're just so lovely up there.
Yeah.
But yeah, Publix is the hardest race I've ever done in my life.
Okay.
It's in Atlanta, and Atlanta, despite most people's opinions, is extremely hilly.
Really?
Oh my gosh. And it was brutal. But yeah, and Nashville was just like raining. I mean, we were going through trenches of 10 inches of water on the run. It was horrible.
Jeez. Okay. So is that what was a difference maker for you for the most part was hills and weather is what made it whether you were going to have a good day or not?
Yeah, weather definitely had a bit to do with it.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you could go out and start a race great, and if the weather was against you, it could really be against you.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, Savannah, one of the years we did it in November, it was like 70 degrees, so it was actually too hot, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, but you when you sign up 6 or 9 months in advance, you don't know.
You have no idea. Yeah, exactly.
You know, so it is what it is. I mean, it's just there are some races. There's all sorts of stuff on Google about the best races to qualify for.
Yeah.
For Boston or whatever. But, you know, there's only a handful of more races that I would just love to do if I ever decide to do this again.
Uh-huh.
You know, but I've accomplished most of what I want to accomplish.
That's great. Yeah, you've checked a lot off the bucket list for sure.
Yeah.
So a lot of questions that I get about the marathon distance is about the routine leading up to it. So not just the training, but like the week before, nutrition, tapering periods, things like that. So before you hit a marathon, what is your, say, like week before routine?
So yeah, I usually maxed out 2 weeks before.
Okay.
Right around 2 weeks before. And then basically tapered for the last 2 weeks. And you know what? I actually don't know that that's a really great plan. What I found is that when I tapered 2 weeks, I had my worst races. When I only tapered for about a week, I had much better races. And I think there's something about your body staying in the full. I mean, I get it that it says rest your body, but I think your body's actually really, really good about just like stepping up to the plate, quite honestly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, if I took that last week and just kind of said that, like, if I finish my last long run on Saturday and the next race is on the next Saturday, and on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, I'm just kind of doing, you know, 6, 5, 4, and kind of keeping it like that, it made more sense to me to do that.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah, I think a 1 week to 1.5 week taper at the most was good. When I tried the 3s and the 2 week tapers, I hated it.
Yeah.
By the time I got there, I didn't feel very prepared.
Yeah, you feel kind of cold. That's how I felt too. Well, I did a 2 week taper, and first of all, for my first one, that was the most anxious I was the whole training block because I didn't feel like I could do the things that I was training for. It was like it felt like I was really holding myself back, but. Yeah, you just get a little antsy, your body gets a little cold. So that makes total sense to me. What was the longest run that you would do before you started your taper period?
You know, I think I did a 21 or 22. I don't think I ever made it to the 23 or 24 like I was probably supposed to. I think I ended up wimping out towards the end because I was like, you know what, at this point in time, if I can just get to where the wall is and where my real, you know, then you're just gonna have to gut through it because you can do 23 all you want. I think I did 22. You know, you can get to 22 and have a really good run or a bad run. It doesn't really matter because the day of the race, the way your body is burning adrenaline and glycogen and all these other things, you know, and that's, I think, at least from what I had always understood, the wall is pretty much where your body shifts from making, you know, from the glycogen to the fat. And I'm telling you, some of those races, when you hit a wall, you hit a wall hard.
Yeah. Once you get to that point, there's no going back. I've heard some other ultra runners that I've talked to that talk about that point where when you hit the wall, some of them will try to over nutrition to try to get back, you know, back over.
Yeah.
And you can't. Once you're to that point, you're done for.
Yeah. And it's just something you have to get used to. And I think that when you finally figure out what that is, it's actually easier because you understand this is temporary. Give me a mile or two and it'll flip for me. But that mile or two right there, and the problem with like Boston, for example, is Boston's essentially 16 miles downhill, 4 miles uphill, and then 6 miles downhill. It's 16 or, you know, something like that. 16 plus 4 plus 6, roughly. And I'm telling you, when you get to the 16 mile mark and you're downhill quads the whole time braking, and then you start going uphill and you start hitting the wall at the same time. That's a nasty combination.
Sure. Yeah, so. It was Boston. I mean, it obviously just happened. So a lot of people have either ran it for the first time or are experiencing it for the first time. Was that the hardest race that you've ran, would you say?
Hardest? Yeah, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say it was. I mean, it was, first of all, like, again, I had qualified in 15, didn't run it till 17. So I had, in the midst of that, I'd had hernia surgery, really lost all my time. And kind of got to the point where I was like, you know what? I actually hit my goal by qualifying. So I was like, Boston was my number 10. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I'm just going to go enjoy it. And
yeah.
What I didn't think about on that combination was to enjoy it, you should be in good shape. And I wasn't, I wasn't in as good a shape as I should have been. And it was a lot more walking on that marathon than there should have been.
Really? Sure. Yeah. So what do you feel like for the Boston Marathon specifically, but maybe it's the same for some of the other ones that you've ran, do you have a set of miles where you feel really good and you know where your trouble miles are, so you know mentally to prepare for them, or is it different every race?
No, my trouble miles are 15 to 20.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all day long. That's where my shift always happened. And then after that, you just kind of, I don't know, I kind of went into a trance after 20. Like it was it was autopilot, and you're running and you're trying to keep up with the music in your head or whatever you're trying to do.
Yeah.
And you're cussing at yourself because you're like, why am I doing this to myself? I'm never doing this again.
Yep. And then immediately after, you're like, all right, when's the next one? I just did it.
Yeah.
Go.
Yep.
So 15 to 20, what typically are you telling yourself to push yourself through that point?
You know, for me, I'm just not a quitter. I mean, mm-hmm. I think I told a buddy of mine this story. I said, I did one ultra, and it was it was called the Sweetwater 420. So it was a 50K. So it's at 32 miles. Mm-hmm. And I did the first loop and I got done in like 3.5 hours, and it's all through the woods. So it's a lot slower. It's a lot different trail running and stuff like that. So you got done with the first round, and I sat down, and it's typical. You get halfway through and you can sit down and have a snack. You can do whatever. It's just a different kind of a format. I wasn't trying to run and gun it. I sat down and had a peanut butter and jelly sandwich and a beer. And I was like, I think I'm done. I think I'm just done. Uh-huh. I'd already run 16 miles and I was like, I'm good. And then it hit me. And this is kind of what, to answer your question roundabout, I kind of had that first moment of like, I'm going to have to tell people I DNF'd. Like, I didn't finish, and I've never told anybody that I've quit, ever. And it sat on my heart for about 3 seconds. I was like, oh, I'm not doing that.
Can't do it.
I can't do that. So I ate my peanut butter jelly sandwich, had my beer, and I got back up and started running again. And we finished the race, and it was fantastic. But it was also one of the longest races I've ever run. But it was just one of those things of I wanted to finish it.
Yeah. You do just have to commit to it. I've talked about it a couple of times on here, but I think just knowing that there's an end is what I think can get a lot of people through. It's a couple hours of your day. It's one day. It's not going to be over a couple of days. It's one day that you have to commit to. And when you're done, you're either going to feel, like you said, you're going to DNF and you're going to have to tell people that you DNF'd, or you're going to push through it. And maybe you didn't get the time you wanted, but at least you pushed through it and you can say that you did it.
Or sometimes it's just the little things, like when you see the old man limping by you and he's like going by you.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're like, oh, heck no. That is not going to happen.
Yeah.
It kind of re-inspires you. You're like, let's go.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
The biggest thing is it showed you kind of who you are to the deepest core.
Totally. It does. Yeah. And you find a lot of that out through training too, I think, when you're, a lot of times you're by yourself. I know you trained with other people, but I think a lot of people go through training and go through their long runs by themselves.
Yeah.
And you're kind of casting a vote or a bet with yourself on those days when you're out there by yourself. You've got whatever, however many miles on the calendar. You could quit. It's just you that's going to know if you quit or not, but I think it's just casting a vote against yourself of, am I going to do this or am I going to not do it? You know?
Yeah. It's a huge personal statement to do this stuff. I mean, do you have it? Do you not? Who are you? And it's not to be taken so profoundly, but it is a profound statement at the end of the day.
Definitely. Definitely. Yeah. So I'm curious too, I guess throughout any of your training, if it's evolved, what did nutrition look like? Like, did you do gels? Did you do, I know some people do dried fruit, the more natural stuff. What was nutrition or fuel like for you?
So I did a lot of the hammer gels, and that worked pretty well. actually, I think some of my better runs, though, were the things that I was using something way more natural. If you had like the runs where you had the orange slices, or you had a banana, or you had something like a, you know, even as much as it sounds counterintuitive, like a PB&J, those kinds of things, your body will take care of digesting that just fine.
Sure.
The gels actually started hurting my belly after about two gels.
Interesting.
And
okay.
And you could over Gatorade and you could overdo all of that stuff. And I mean, I think what I would really, really recommend is going and getting a real electrolyte mix that's made for this kind of stuff, like Hammer or any of those big, you know, high end athletic companies. But I mean, essentially Gatorade is sugar water.
Right.
With a little bit of sodium in it. But I think there are other combinations that are better and better on your stomach. But I was actually more fond of eating more real food, whether it was raisins or what was some of the other stuff I took? Jelly beans. I mean, believe it or not, things like that.
Yeah.
You know, things that actually like challenged your mouth while you're going, because it would give you something to do. You just had to find something that you didn't have to chew too long because you didn't want to breathe through your nose, really.
Yeah, yeah, sure. So it could be too chewy.
Yeah, but gels just kind of bothered me after a while. And I don't know, because there was just not enough sustenance to it. I mean, granted, it's 100 calories or whatever, but it just wasn't enough.
Yeah, I've experienced that too. Especially, and gels are tricky because if you don't take enough water with them too, you can really upset your stomach. And then it's really hard to bounce back from that. But you're probably the third person that's sent that I've interviewed that have gone more towards whole foods or natural foods. And I know for me, when I was getting started, all I saw were brands, you know, like the Goo brand, Huma, which are great brands, don't get me wrong, but that's what's fed to you as a newer runner, is you got to try all these new things. If you're going to take it serious, you got to get into gels, but I don't think you do. I think you just need to try out a few things and figure out what's best for you, but definitely don't feel like you need to dive into the
combination of
gel
a lot
world.
Of things. But if you watch people who do ultras, they don't do the gels so much. They're actually stopping and actually eating.
Right, right. Yeah, that's important for sure. Cool. So looking back, how did you feel like you kept yourself on track for so long? So for 12 marathons, what was the motivation that kept you going through the whole thing?
It was all about Boston. That's all it was. I mean, basically I did the first one for fun. And then the second one was like, well, this will be fun. This will be with a group of people. And then the third one was like, wait a minute, they're actually saying that this could be good. And then the next 4, 5, 6 marathons probably was like, let's just see what happens. And I think over the course of the next three years, I probably ran another, that was probably 6 or 7 more marathons, all trying to qualify. Because now it became like, let's just see what happens. Where am I at? And it was not, and like, even if I ran a 3:28, which wasn't even close, or a 3:38, it was an element of like, well, the first one was like 3:58. So we're getting better. We're getting better. We're getting better. And then it became, what do I have to do? Because I'm having that taste for it. And then it just became Boston ODC. I mean, obsessive OCD. You know, I was just obsessed with, I had to do this. So that was the whole drive. And then after a while, I was like, well, I'll do the Abbott 6, but it never played out that way because, again, life was changing so much.
Sure,
And then just the commitment. Good Lord. The commitment to get ready for a marathon was so much. I was like, okay, I need to switch up a little bit.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. That makes sense. How many world majors have you ran?
I think it would just be the two, Boston and New York.
Boston and New York,
but,
okay.
Again, cool. that 7 continents, the things they had access to was all 6 Abbotts. They also had access to Antarctica, which I was really intrigued with, right? So, I mean, like, I was thinking
that'd be cool.
Hit all 7 continents. I mean, I thought that'd be really cool.
Yeah.
But again, my wife doesn't love to travel. And this became another part of the picture, is that I was like, I'm going to go to Antarctica alone. I'm going to go to the China Wall alone. This isn't what it's supposed to be.
Right, right.
And that kind of switched up my motives, honestly.
Shifted focus, yeah. That makes sense. I mean, still cool that you got to run too, though. Yeah. The New York and Boston are two great ones.
Our whole family.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, our whole family went to that one. And New York, I took a buddy from Atlanta, and he went and did the trip with me. So all the other stuff was pretty much regional, so it was fine.
Yeah, yeah. That's cool. I've goals of running at least one. I just actually just applied for the London Marathon today, so fingers crossed
that
we can get into that one.
That would be such a good one.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm hoping for the best, but we'll see. Okay, cool. Well, you know, looking back on everything, I know you dropped some advice kind of throughout, but what would be a few pieces of advice that you'd give to somebody that's looking to train for their first marathon, or maybe they've signed up and they're just getting started?
I think one thing is the expectations, like have a longer game plan than you anticipate. It doesn't, you're not going to necessarily look at a 6 month plan and go, okay, I'm going to get from here to here. It doesn't happen that fast for most people. There's a lot of physiology being changed here. I think one of the things is also I'd really work on strength because, like, for example, with Boston, you're shooting the quads, you're braking the whole time. You don't realize it, but you're coming downhill. So strength would be massive, like building a lot more strength than you think, not just cardio. But the other part is the expectation really is like, okay, if you're running a 350 this year, maybe shoot for a 340 next year, not the 320 to qualify, but like understand it may take you a minute to get there. Because if you do it too fast, too, you really risk the injury factor. And the injuries are real.
Yeah. Yeah. And what would be some advice? Because the injury is obviously a big thing in this space. So what would be some advice you'd give to somebody who's maybe experienced an injury like you did, bouncing back from something like that?
I think the biggest thing I wasn't doing was stretching. I mean, I had, you know, the tendonitis just like the rest of us. I had all sorts of plantar. I still have basically like a bursitis in my heel that just makes a protrusion on the back of it. I mean, I think it a lot more stretching. Especially post run, but you know, even pre run would be massively beneficial for all of us. And then again, if you counter that with some strength, I think a lot of the injuries go out the window because you're not dealing with weak parts of your body. Whereas when we run, we're using the same set of muscles over and over and over, and the supporting muscles aren't necessarily getting work like we think they are.
Yeah.
So I think that's a big part of it. The second part, nutrition, would be that I would work out a nutrition plan in general. I was eating whatever could get in front of me, basically. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I think that's the other thing, too, is really watching. And I'm not trying to say, like, diet, but just being really purposeful about eating a ton of protein, probably. Not loading up on carbs, because believe it or not, you'll find it with whatever you need. You know, but the protein will help the reconstruction of the muscles you do break down. And I don't think I was doing enough of that. I think I was carving up like everybody else says you should do. You know, instead of spaghetti, maybe I should have done chicken.
Right. So, that makes sense. Yeah. And did you ever work with a coach throughout any of this, or was it all teaching yourself?
No, I after I qualified for Boston, after I hired another coach in Atlanta to get me back to Boston. And that was the guy that was training me all the way into Fargo. And then after I got out of Fargo, I was just like, I'm done with the competition. I'm just going to go run New York for fun. Mm-hmm. But, you know, no, I mean, I worked with a coach for about a year, and it was pretty beneficial. He would give you a plan. There's just so many plans out there now, though, that honestly you could do for free.
Yeah. Yeah. So you feel like you could find resources out there without coaching in the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, the last question I really have is just what's coming up next for you. I know you, you're kind of out of the running world, but what do you have on the plate for the next couple of, I guess, for the next rest of the year?
You know, for me, I'm really, again, getting back into, I work out about 5-6 times a week, but I mean, it's probably 2-3 runs, 2-3 weight, you know, weight workouts. From a personal level, I'm trying to work on my golf game, to be honest with you. I'm kind of obsessive compulsive about when I get into something that I really want to be good at. That's the one thing.
Yeah.
But I mean, I've got a lot going on. I mean, I've got, you know, real estate teams in Atlanta and Savannah, and I golf probably once or twice a week. And then I do a little bit of investment properties and stuff like that. And then on top of all that, I play drums for the Savannah Bananas on the tour,
which is so cool.
So, I mean, I spend a lot of time just kind of putting a life by design together. So that's probably the most of 2024. My son graduates high school in three weeks. I'm sorry, he graduates college in 3 weeks. And so he will be joining the Savannah Bananas this summer. So we'll be doing that tour together for the rest of the year.
That's great.
Yeah. So we're just kind of at an interesting stage of our life where that is kind of what I'm doing, is just a life by design this year and just enjoying that chapter. Not massive fitness goals right now, but you know, just starting to really eat. There's a great app I just downloaded called Track My Fitness. I've been really kind of watching my calories and just kind of, you know, I'm above 50, so I'm kind of getting to that point where I just really want to see how good of a shape and longevity wise I can stick around here.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. I mean, you've got a lot of even if it's not running, right? I mean, you've got a lot coming up this year, so that's awesome.
Yeah, just lots of fun. Lots of fun.
Yeah.
Where's your next race?
My next race. So I just ran a 10 miler yesterday. That was my first race back from after the marathon. But I've got a half marathon next month, and then I'm training for 2 marathons later this year.
Okay.
So I'll be able to get in 3 this year.
Which marathons are you doing?
Just some local ones. I'm doing one in Durham, North Carolina, in October. And then I'm doing there's a big race in Raleigh called the City of Oaks Marathon.
Okay.
Doing that one in November.
So nice.
We'll be back to the marathon training pretty soon.
That's awesome. That's good stuff. Yeah. I mean, again,
yeah.
The reason I would say that run less, run faster is because I like the balance of the fact that you're not just monotony of run.
Yeah.
And that it counteracted every muscle on your body so that when you do run, you just feel stronger. And that's, I think, the biggest thing that became hard is that I got in a rut.
Yeah.
So that's why I'd encourage it. And again, if weight lifting or whatever is not in that plan, I might have made it up and put it in there myself. But
sure.
If it's not in there, I would definitely do weight at least twice a week, like lots of squats, lots of lunges, and, you know, jump squats and stuff like that, you know, working on like explosion, because that'll help you with the propel and the push off your toe box. And I think that would be really, really good.
Yeah, I'm actually gonna look into that after this, because I just ran yesterday, my race yesterday, so I'm starting a new training block now. And that's one thing that was tough to fit in was running throughout the week, working a full-time job, obviously.
Yep.
So something where I could work on a couple of specific areas a few times a week and still build distance on the weekends. That sounds like a good plan.
At the end of my running, like really running for these things, I was probably running 5 to 6 twice a week and 15 to 20 on the weekend. I mean, I wasn't running more than 30 miles.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's probably not enough. Fact is, it's just probably not enough. But if you do it with purpose on each of them, you found that one was quick, you know, fast twitch. One was the pace run, the tempo run.
Yeah.
And then the long distance, obviously, you're supposed to keep it within a reasonable rate. But I mean, a lot of that was just teaching your muscles to produce on a much longer term.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know that there's a way to do it. You know, Meb for Mortals is a fun book too.
Yeah.
And
okay, cool.
That's a really good one Meb wrote. So he has some good stuff in there as well.
Okay, cool. Yeah, that's a great recommendation. I'll have to check out some of this stuff. I'm at a turning point, so I'm excited to go do some research now.
Absolutely. I really encourage you on this next chapter. Just enjoy the journey. That's my biggest thing. Out of all of it, I did all of it, and it's like blink, it was gone.
Yeah, yeah. Just enjoy the whole process of the thing. I think now that I'm through the first one was just like, am I a runner? Like trying to identify with it, you know?
Right.
Just trying to build distance, trying to see if I could do this thing. But now that I've done it, I'm definitely more focused on just the training process of the whole thing, making sure I'm, you know, staying present for every run. Making sure I have the goal in sight, but enjoying the process along the way for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm honestly, you know, one of the things I think that would be really kind of cool too, is if I had to go back into it, I'd probably spend a lot more time encouraging others instead of being so selfish about it. Cause I was very all about me on that.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. It was your goal, your Boston qualifier. You got to accomplish that goal. Yep.
Yep. So I think that there's a lot. I mean, there's such good lessons. And I mean, marathon runners are so just unique people. I've never met one that I thought was a normal person ever.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's cool to have that community of people around you, because you talk to, like, I talk to people at work and they think I'm absolutely crazy. But then I talk to runners and I'm just one of the runners. So it's great to have that community of people around you.
Absolutely. No, it's fantastic. So if I can be any help to you, you know, you got my number. So reach out to me.
Yeah, 100%. And I really appreciate you coming on today. This has been awesome. I've learned a lot. Hopefully the people listening have learned a lot as well. But I just really appreciate you coming on.
Well, cool. I appreciate you. I appreciate the opportunity.